This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
I want to do something on this show that we haven't done on the Nancy Guthrie case yet. We're going to be walking through the entire thing from the night Nancy disappeared all the way to where this investigation stands in one piece, the whole timeline, every event, every development, every piece of evidence, every news beat, every chapter. And here's why I want to do this. The case is so much going on. So many separate developments, so many side stories, so many days it felt like turning points. And I think a lot of people, even people who've been following this case closely on this show, have started to lose the thread. Where are we? What actually happened? What did the agencies do? What did they not do? What's been reported? What's been disputed? What's still open? So, you and I are going back to the start, beginning to now, so we can all see it together, we can build our own picture of where the case actually stands in your head with all the pieces in front of you, so that when the next development drops, and it will, you've got a full picture to weigh it against, a fresh picture. All there, all laid out in one piece, like only time can give us perspective. Your thoughts as we work through this in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Links are in the description. I'd love for you to weigh in. So here's what I want to be straight up about right up front. I'm not going to tell you what to think about any of this. I'm just going to walk you through every piece in order. There are sides on this case and theories and disputed facts and people I respect who read the same evidence in completely different ways. And I'm going to lay it out. You take it from there, okay? This isn't going to be a here's what Tony thinks piece. Maybe I'll throw a little conjecture in there, but I will let you know when I do. Before we go back, here's where we are right now, because I think you need to feel where this case has landed before we walk through how it got here. Outside of the a newsroom in Tucson, the KVOA TV station, there's a big banner. Nancy's face is on it. Three words are underneath: bring her home. Around the photo, there's hundreds of handwritten notes from strangers, people who never met Nancy, people who drove from Phoenix just to write something down and pin it up. The banner went up in the days after she vanished, and it's still there. The cameras that surrounded her house in February, I mean, a lot of them are gone. Reporters gone. The country, the way the country always does, moved on. The banner didn't. 4 months in, that's where the case visually sits. A banner, notes from strangers, a missing 84-year-old grandmother whose name is still on the FBI's seeking information page. That is the picture. Now, let me walk you through how we got here. First, Nancy, because before this is a timeline, she is a person. And I want you to keep her in your head every step of the way through what we're about to walk through. Nancy's 84. Mother of three. One of them is Savannah Guthrie. Yes, obviously from the Today Show. Before she was anybody's mother on television, Nancy raised a son with Down syndrome who outlived every prediction the doctors gave her. She had been a fixture of her Catalina Foothills neighborhood in Tucson for decades, kind of presence that pulled hundreds of people into a single church to pray for her when she disappeared. Nancy is a pacemaker. She has medication that she takes every single day for her heart. She has a hearing aid, and she takes it out at night. All three were left inside her house the night she was taken. Whoever was on her porch took Nancy and left the rest behind. That detail is one a lot of people in this case keep coming back to. I'll let that sit there too. So let me start where this starts. Saturday, January 31st. Nancy takes an Uber to her daughter Annie's house for dinner, a normal Saturday for a woman in her 80s. Around 9:48 p.m., a family member drives her home, garage opens, garage closes. Then come the three timestamps the case has been built around. 1:47 a.m., Nancy's doorbell camera disconnects. 2:12 a.m., the camera registers motion it can't save. 2:28 a.m., her pacemaker app disconnects from her phone. 41 minutes, that's the window between those anchor points. By the time her congregation noticed she wasn't in her pew or virtual pew, if you will, the next morning, that window was already 8 hours closed. Now the response. Parishioners alert their family Sunday afternoon. The sheriff's department is at the house by Sunday night, and by Wednesday, Savannah and her siblings record their first video plea. Three adult children trying to keep their voices steady on camera, asking whoever has their mother to bring her home. Thursday, the FBI announces a $50,000 reward, and inside Nancy's home, deputies find what looked like a crime scene. Nancy's blood confirmed later by DNA on her own porch. The doorbell camera that was screwed into the wall, gone. Her phone, her wallet, and her medication still inside. And the country reacts. The tip line gets buried almost immediately. Inside the first 24 hours after authorities go public, more than 4,000 calls come in. 2 weeks in, the FBI is working through more than 18,000 tips. And by the end of February, more than 30,000. People want to help. The country wants to help. How the local agency processed that volume, that's been part of the conversation around this case ever since. That same week, the opportunists show up, and I want to deal with these people right here in this part of the timeline. So they're set aside, and we keep moving. A 42-year-old man in Hawthorne, California, named Derek Kalela, allegedly texts Nancy's daughter and son-in-law from a virtual phone number demanding Bitcoin. The FBI traces him through his email and IP address. Inside a week, he's arrested, charged federally, released on a 20-grand bond, and he has a federal date now in Tucson. At the same time, TMZ starts receiving messages from somebody else claiming inside knowledge of who took Nancy. Both the FBI and the family's representatives have publicly characterized these communications as separate from the actual investigation. Kalela is presumed innocent until his trial concludes. Whoever wrote those messages to TMZ has not, by any official statement made public, been linked to whoever was on Nancy's porch. So we keep walking through this timeline. File them in their own folder, folder right there. By the end of the week, at least the end of week one, the case has a national audience. Nancy's blood on the porch, her abandoned medication, a missing camera, and the 41-minute window. What it doesn't have is a publicly identified suspect. That's the central gap. And that comes February 10th. There are a lot of people on this story have been pointing to ever since. The FBI in Pima County release the doorbell footage. The public finally sees what the camera caught before it went dark. Man in a ski mask, gloves, a jacket, a holstered handgun on his hip, about 5'9", 5'10", average build, 25-liter Ozark Trail hiker pack on his back, a backpack the FBI specifies is sold exclusively at Walmart. He walks up to the door, he sees the camera, he reaches down, pulls a clump of weeds out of Nancy's own yard, and uses it to cover the lens. That clip set off a debate that hasn't stopped. Was this planned? Was the camera covering improvised on the spot? Or did he know it was there ahead of time? Was a masked figure there for Nancy specifically, or for the house? Different analysts have come down on different sides. The FBI has not publicly answered any of those questions. So when we mention this footage, all we can say is for sure is that's what the camera caught. In the days after the footage drops, deputies find discarded gloves about 2 miles from Nancy's house that resemble the pair in the video. They pull DNA off the gloves. And then, a beat that's gotten a lot of attention from legal analysts, the searchers themselves dropped 16 of their gloves on the ground during the canvas. The same area where the suspect's gloves were recovered is also an area where the searcher's gloves were recovered. How that affects the future evidence handling and chain of custody is something a legal analyst salivates over. The FBI doubles the reward to $100,000 and brings in its elite hostage rescue team. Neat. If there was a hostage to be rescued, the unit out of Quantico that handles high-stakes operations comes to Tucson. So let me give you a picture of what the search actually looks like at its peak, because this time sometimes gets lost in the the noise. FBI agents canvassing roadways, washes, pull-offs, every gas station between Nancy's neighborhood and the major routes out of Tucson. Surveillance video pulled from neighbors' blocks in every direction. The Bureau working with Google to extract residual data from the back end of Nancy's camera, trying to recover anything the device may have caught before it disconnected. Search and rescue teams sweeping the desert. So many news crews and true crime followers gathering outside Nancy's house that deputies put up street barriers and manage the traffic. One beat from this part of the timeline, I think a lot of people have already forgotten. The United Cajun Navy showed up, the volunteer search organization that mobilizes for natural disasters and missing persons cases, publicly stated they offered Sheriff Chris Nanos a full operation package. According to the group's vice president, Nanos did not respond. The sheriff has not publicly addressed that claim, and there's plenty of questions about the legitimacy of the Cajun Navy, or which version of it is wanting to help, and for what reasons. By late February, the FBI's command post, the one set up in Tucson in those first frantic days, moves to Phoenix. Bureau sources tell CBS that the time-sensitive on-the-ground work is done. Leads can be run from anywhere now. The federal energy on the scene, it starts to fade. The cameras start picking up. The crowds outside Nancy's house, they start thinning out. Okay, now we come to the part of the timeline that's run as a parallel story alongside the case itself. And I want to be careful here because there are people on both sides of it, and I'm not asking you to side with either. In late February, the Arizona Republic reports that Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos publicly posted resume, misstated his work history. He did not leave the El Paso Police Department in 1984. According to public records cited the report, he resigned in 1982 in lieu of termination after a stretch that included multiple suspensions and allegations involving use of force, illegal gambling, habitual tardiness, insubordination, and dereliction of duties. His department updated the resume and called the discrepancy a clerical error. I'll let you read the report and the public records and form your own opinion. Not long after, Nanos tells the New York Times the case to find Nancy, it could take an hour from now, maybe weeks from now, or years from now. The word years landed hard with the Guthrie family. Family representatives responded publicly. The sheriff later clarified the remark. The exchange became a flashpoint in the public conversation around the case. A Republican congressional candidate named Daniel Buttigieg launched a recall. 120,000 signatures inside 120 days with the Guthrie case named as the last straw. The Pima County Board of Supervisors votes unanimously to compel Nanos to testify under oath on the resume, on retaliation allegations from his last election challenger, on the investigation itself. Some people on this case see all of that as a sideshow that has nothing to do with finding Nancy. Other people see it as the central story. That's a debate that's been running for months. I'm laying it out there for you. The reporting is the reporting. What you make of it is certainly your call. Then comes May 5th, a moment people in this story have been pointing to ever since. FBI Director Kash Patel goes on Sean Hannity's podcast and addresses on the record what has been whispered around Tucson for quite some time. Patel says the Pima County Sheriff's Department did not initially cooperate with the FBI in the way the Bureau expected. He says the Bureau could have helped sooner, particularly with DNA work. Nanos has publicly disputed how Patel characterized the relationship. So it's a big he said thing. So there's the on-record split, the director of the FBI on one side, the local sheriff on the other, each agency offering a different account of what happened during the days when the case was hottest. I don't have a way to adjudicate between them, and frankly, neither does anybody outside the investigation. That's the situation we're in. Around the same window, legal analysts, including a defense attorney quoted by Newsweek, have publicly flagged a series of complications around the evidence picture as the case has aged, mixed DNA, testing delays, the contaminated glove site, chain of custody questions. The conclusion those analysts have offered is that the longer the case goes without resolution, the more difficult any eventual prosecution might become. That's their analysis. Neither the FBI nor the Sheriff's Department have publicly responded to it, although it's really just kind of one of those facts of life. And then the case quiets. Savannah Guthrie returns to the Today Show in early April after a two-month leave. She spent in Arizona with her family. The family's reward climbs from $100,000 to $1 million. And on the latest, as of the latest public update from authorities, no claim has come in. Now, $1 million is a lot of money. In a lot of high-profile abduction cases, somebody eventually calls a girlfriend, a roommate, a cellmate who heard somebody talk. And this one, by the agency's own statements, that call has not yet come. What that silence means? Again, it's for you to decide. There are analysts who read it as evidence a suspect was acting alone. There are analysts who read it as evidence a suspect has people around him whose silence is being kept by something stronger than money. There are analysts who think the answer is something none of us have considered yet. The honest answer is nobody outside the investigation actually knows. By mid-May, Nanos confirmed to People magazine and an interviewer that his department is no longer communicating directly with the Guthrie family. The FBI is now the sole liaison. The same sheriff who told the Guthries in February he wasn't giving up by mid-May is not speaking with them directly at all. The 100-day mark passes. The sheriff's department puts out a statement. Scientific evidence processing, DNA analysis, digital media review, all of it ongoing. A few weeks later, after another silence, the department breaks in to say essentially the same thing. Still ongoing. So now let me put the whole board in front of you, where everything sits. As of where you and I are talking. Mixed DNA under analysis. Doorbell footage still under what the sheriff's department calls forensic review. The masked man on tape, not publicly identified. The $1 million reward sitting on a table with no legitimate claim. A federal trial coming for Derek Kalala for the alleged Bitcoin demands, separate from whoever was on Nancy's porch. A sheriff facing a recall campaign and a board of supervisors investigation under oath. A family that, as of mid-May, is hearing from the FBI as the sole point of contact rather than from the local agency that handled the case from its start. That is the board. That is everything that has been reported, confirmed, or publicly stated of substance about the Nancy Guthrie case from January 31st to the moment you and I are talking about it. That's the timeline, beginning to now. Everything I've got, again, of substance. There's little tentacles all over. But again, we don't have 20 hours to discuss. We've already discussed them all. If you want to go back to the tentacles of this, look back in the last 5 months of videos and you will see all of the tentacles of this. This is your baseline if you're just trying to get caught up or have a bit of a palate cleanser as to what's going on here. Let's go back to that banner outside the newsroom in Tucson. KVOA. The handwritten notes from strangers, months of well wishes. Nobody has taken the banner down. Nobody's come home. Nancy went home from dinner with her family at 9:48 on a Saturday night. She wore a hearing aid she took out that night. She had medication she needed every day to keep her heart steady. She had a pacemaker that pinged for the last time at 2:28 in the morning. 4 months. More than 30,000 tips, the FBI's elite hostage rescue team on the ground in those first days with no hostage to rescue, $1 million reward sitting on the table, doorbell footage, the blood on the porch, the 41-minute window, the recall, the Board of Supervisors investigations, the Patel interview, the People magazine confirmation, the 100-day silence. That's what we know. What it adds up to, that is for the FBI and the Sheriff's Department and a future jury to determine. For you and me watching from the outside, holding on to every piece while we wait for the next one. Her name is Nancy Guthrie, not Savannah's mom, not the missing 84-year-old, not the woman from the Today Show story, Nancy Guthrie. If you haven't said her name out loud in a while, say it now. Because somewhere, somebody out there knows where. She is still waiting for somebody to come bring her home. Whether she's alive or not is another question. But she deserves answers and she deserves to be found. That's where it's at. So if you've been trying to figure out where everything's at with the case and kind of get a baseline, I hope that helped you. Kind of helped me just put it all back into perspective, not going down this rabbit hole or that rabbit hole, because that seems to be a lot of what we're doing right now. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Will she be found? When will she be found? What do you think is happening? We'll continue that conversation there. Links are in the description. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.